You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
This episode is supported by FX's Clipped, the scandalous story of the 2014 Clippers owner's racist remarks captured on tape and heard around the world. The series charts the tape's impact on a dysfunctional basketball organization striving to win against their reputation as the most cursed team in the league. Starring Lawrence Fishburne, Jackie Weaver, Cleopatra Coleman, and Ed O'Neill. FX's Clipped. Streaming June 4th, only on Hulu.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care, and we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it, all while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
This is Kick-Ass Politics. I'm Ben Mathis. Hi, folks. Just a quick announcement. We're in the midst of a very important fundraising drive to come up with all of our production costs for 2016. So if you like Kick-Ass Politics and you value what I'm doing here, then I hope you'll go to GoFundMe.com/kickasspolitics and donate what you can. It's vital that we fund our production budget for the coming year so I can focus my energies on the content side of Kick-Ass Politics, which is probably a lot more involved than you might think. So be a part of what I'm creating here. Just go to GoFundMe.com/kickasspolitics. Or hit the donate button on our webpage at kickasspolitics.com. If you go there now and donate something, anything, doesn't matter what amount, I promise I'll keep doing what I'm doing here and producing new shows for you every week. Thanks in advance, folks, and now enjoy the show. Hi there, I'm Ben Mathis and welcome to Kick-Ass Politics. Terrorists crossing the southern border with a radiological bomb that shuts down America's second busiest port. A Chinese plot to buy the presidency. A North Korean cyber attack that crashes U.S. financial markets and knocks out power to much of the eastern seaboard. A bioterror attack at Disney World that quickly spreads the deadly smallpox virus to all 50 states within a matter of days. I'm not talking about the latest action flick, or a Tom Clancy thriller, or a video game. These are just a few of the worst-case scenarios detailed in a new book called Failures of the Imagination, The Deadliest Threats to Our Homeland and How to Thwart Them, by Congressman Michael McCaul. And he would know a thing or two about it because he spent 10 years as Chief of Counterterrorism and National Defense for the U.S. Attorney's Office in Texas, and he also worked in the Justice Department's Public Integrity Section, where he uncovered elaborate plots by foreign powers to influence U.S. elections. And since 2005, he's served as the congressman representing Texas's 10th District. He's a senior member of the House Foreign Affairs Committee and chairman of the House Committee on Homeland Security. From his position on the Homeland Security Committee, Chairman McCaul sees intel that reveals the very real threats, plots, and near misses by America's enemies. And while the types of doomsday scenarios he shares with me today may sound fantastical and far-fetched, he says these are exactly the types of capabilities that terrorist groups and rogue nations are working to acquire, or in some cases, may already have. Chairman McCaul says our intelligence community needs to get as creative as our enemies if we're to prepare for the worst. And he also says the best way to keep terrorists from crossing our borders is to go on the offensive and take the war to them. Trust me, folks, you're not going to want to miss this one. Coming up with my guest today, Congressman Michael McCaul, in just a moment.
To Washington, it's time for Kick-Ass Politics. And now here's your host, Ben Mathis.
Today, I'm joined over the phone by Congressman Michael McCaul, who serves as the chairman of the House Committee on Homeland Security and also on the House Foreign Affairs Committee. Chairman McCaul, thanks for coming on the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Congratulations first on the book. It's called Failures of Imagination, The Deadliest Threats to Our Homeland and How to Thwart Them. I found it very interesting because you envision 8 hypothetical scenarios in great detail, and some of these, they read like a Tom Clancy novel. I will compliment you and say that you have a gift for storytelling here.
Thank you.
But then, you know, about a few pages into enjoying what feels like this suspense thriller, the reader kind of has this oh hell moment where you suddenly start explaining just how likely these nightmare scenarios are and how they've been attempted in the past, or you know, plans that have been uncovered, how many of the necessary elements are already in place. And it's a scary realization.
I'd say first, the reason I wrote the book is so the American people could really know the truth about the threats that we face as a nation. I think this administration has downplayed this threat consistently, and I don't know why they do this, but they've constantly done it. I don't think it fits with the president's campaign narrative. And when ISIS reared its ugly head, he can't really explain it or effectively deal with it. And so I think it's important the American people really know what the threats are, and then constructively, what can we do to stop it? This book is sort of like what we do in the military and intelligence community. We do these red team exercises, which is, and I know right after 9/11, President Bush brought in a bunch of creative thinkers, actually even some people, Hollywood type producers, to imagine what could happen and then what can we do to stop it? So that's kind of the sort of basic premise of the book, and all the proceeds go to wounded warriors and their children.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. So, which I think is important. A lot of politicians write books just about themselves, and this really has nothing to do with me. It just has to do with the work that I do and why I want the American people to know, again, what the truth is.
I don't know if we have time to get to all 8 of these, but let's definitely try and cover as many as we can. So let's just dive right in here. The first chapter describes a decapitation strike specifically intended to cripple the legislative branch of government from being able to function as usual. Tell us, what would that look like?
You know, the first chapter, I think, deals with a very realistic scenario that actually we've seen in facts and basis of several attempts to hit the Capitol. Since 9/11, we do know that the Capitol was one of the 3 major targets on 9/11. It was a symbol of political power. They wanted to hit economic, military, you know, they hit the Pentagon and World Trade Center, and then political power, which would be the Capitol. And so this sort of drones with explosives and then active shooters is a very realistic type of scenario that could happen. I routinely meet with Capitol Police, Sergeant-at-Arms, to try to harden our defenses. You know, Tom Clancy in one of his books talks about an attack at the State of the Union address, which, you know, every year when we have that, that's obviously a very intense high security situation because of you have all the heads of the seat of the federal government in one place the same time. And so, but, you know, in each of these chapters, you know, I do basically say, could this really happen? And I've talked about factually what has happened in the past. We have had plots against the Capitol. We had that gyrocopter that almost slammed into the Capitol. We had an individual that was arrested that was attempting to fly drones with explosive devices. We had another individual from Ohio that was arrested that had pipe bombs and AK-47s. And so this is all real stuff. And we got to be prepared to stop it.
Yeah, and it was interesting because what you describe in here is a drone that is laden with explosive devices that runs into the Capitol, creates complete chaos at a public event, and then all the congressmen and senators are rushing, trying to get back to their respective branches of Congress. And it's a double-pronged attack where there are actually active shooters waiting for them to head that way and just mowing them down. Mm-hmm. And it's funny because I remember in 2005, I don't know if you remember when this happened, there was a guy who turned out just to be some guy who was confused, who was flying a Cessna into DC airspace. And I was in the Senate Majority Leader's office at the time, Bill Frist at the time, and suddenly Secret Service came in, ran him out of there, and we were told to all run out and get the heck out of there. And we all ended up in that park right outside of Union Station there. And it's funny because I was just standing around, and there was Joe Lieberman. There was Senator McCain. And I thought, my God, if this was a terrorist attack and there was a second strike, and they were waiting for him, you could have taken out, you know, easily half of the Senate right there in that park, just standing around with no security around them.
Right. And, you know, that's, you know, having been through evacuations myself, like you did, you know, the first couple of terms I was in Congress, it's been a while, fortunately, but the same thing. We would all go exit the Capitol and all stand in the parking lot, all the members together. And that's really bad. That's a bad procedure from a security standpoint. And we know that, Al-Qaeda, for instance, the Bali bombing, they had a bomb inside, or ran outside, and they were greeted with a truck bomb. And so it's a classic Al-Qaeda technique, is to kind of create a diversion, if you will, and then have a second wave of attacks, not unlike Paris, which is a multiple simultaneous attacks, causing diversions at one place, like say the soccer stadium, then hitting a concert hall. So, you know, again, this is all based on really a certain, you know, just real life, terrorist scenarios and how they think and how they operate. And you have to really kind of get in their mindset to understand how they do things to be able to effectively stop them.
Yeah, and you're right. It is interesting because they do try, more often than not, try to have multiple dimensions to an attack. And one of the things that you bring up in this specific scenario is the use of drones, which is a big hot issue right now because no one really knows what to do with them. And for one, you mentioned that it's impossible for us to even detect a drone at that altitude, at such a low altitude. And also, how would one even intercept a drone? Especially if it's loaded with explosives, you can't just shoot it down.
Right. And everybody thinks about the airplane, you know, flying in. Well, we have F-16s at Andrews that would scramble and eliminate that threat very quickly. The problem is, as we saw with the gyrocopter, and that just turned out to be a literally guy that went postal. He's a postal worker, delivering mail to members of Congress. Obviously, was a mental case, but the fact that that thing got so close to the Capitol undetected is an issue. We saw a drone that flew, over the White House and crashed, and that went virtually undetected. That's a real concern because they can operate very quickly and sometimes under the radar screen, and we got to be prepared to stop that kind of attack.
Moving on to the second chapter, you envision a scenario where Hezbollah terrorists operating out of Venezuela cross the Mexican border into Texas with the help of drug cartels and then detonate a dirty bomb or a radiological bomb at the port of Houston. Now, we're talking about the second busiest port in America. By far, more foreign trade goes through that port than any other U.S. port. In fact, I think it's something like twice as much foreign trade, import and export, as the next largest port, the port of New York. If that port became incapacitated for a long period of time while we attempted to do a radiation cleanup, would the other U.S. ports be able to handle that overflow, or would we just shut down?
Well, the reason I picked this scenario, what I was trying to do in the book is look at all different types of threats from different countries, whether it be, whether it's ISIS, Al-Qaeda, the Iranian threat, Putin and Russia, China, and cybersecurity, all these different threats. This one, I think the Iranian deal sort of, in my judgment, will lead to a nuclear Iran. There are these flights between Tehran and Caracas, Venezuela. Iran and the Quds Force has a presence in the Western Hemisphere. They were responsible for, you know, the killing of the Jewish center in Argentina, all the individuals down there, two of which, by the way, got released in this prisoner swap just recently. But what it highlights is the vulnerability, I think, that we have to a material coming from Iran on one of these flights that we cannot detect. We can't get the manifest for that, those flights. And then coming with operatives up across the southwest border, which we know is insecure. And then why the Houston port? That is a third, if not more, of the energy supply to the nation goes through that port. So if that scenario happened, you know, I think it'd be more difficult to smuggle a nuclear device in, although that's a plausible scenario as well. It's a lot easier to do, you know, spent fuel and cause a dirty bomb and a contamination scenario where you effectively would shut down the port, with one of the biggest ports and one of the biggest energy drivers to the nation. And that's why that scenario is so concerning to me. As chairman of Homeland Security, I routinely meet with the port authorities to make sure that they're hardened and they're protected. But, you know, going to back to the border, you know, in ISIS's latest publication, Dabiq magazine, they talk about how they thought how easy they thought it would be to smuggle a nuclear device out of Pakistan through transnational criminal organizations into the Western Hemisphere and across the U.S.-Mexico border. So we know that ISIS has talked about this. Bin Laden has talked about this. We know that Iran had a Quds Force operative in Mexico dealing with what he thought was a drug cartel person to assassinate the Saudi ambassador in Washington, D.C. It turned out to be a DEA informant, thank God, and that plot was stopped. But it shows you their intention. And I think, again, that chapter really goes to the issue of, number one, Iran, and number two, border security, that we need to secure the border to protect this country.
Yeah, and in these relationships between groups like Hezbollah and Mexican drug cartels, you have evidence that those relationships, those ties, they do exist now. And I guess my question would be, what's in it for the drug cartels? Because it would seem to me like that would be a huge risk for them.
Yeah, I think that's the conventional thinking, is that they would not want to associate themselves with a terrorist organization because of the blowback factor. And I think there is some truth to that. However, the transnational criminal organizations smuggle drugs and weapons to make money. And quite frankly, they don't care where it's coming from. The human trafficking and human smuggling, we have had many cases of special interest aliens, they call them, from the countries of interest like Afghanistan, Pakistan, Iran and other countries being smuggled into the United States because the smugglers really don't do background checks on the people that they cross, carry across the border, nor do they really care. They're just trying to make a buck and try to make money off it. So I think it's a big vulnerability, particularly between the ports of entry and then, of course, with all these tunnels. And in this scenario, in my book, they actually use one of these tunnels to get into the United States because we know Hezbollah, which is a sort of a terrorist arm of the Shia faction in Iran, will use they have been very good at using tunnels in the Middle East. And I think the Mexicans have learned a lot from them in terms of how to build these tunnels.
Yeah, and you also point out that the radiological material that would be used in this case is actually quite easy to get, and we've basically handed it to them through the nuclear deal with Iran. Even if they're not working on an actual nuclear weapon, we're giving them all the material they would need to construct a dirty bomb very easily.
And that's right. And, you know, I think we all talk about Iran going nuclear, and that's a huge threat. You know, quite honestly, I could have written 200 chapters, this would be probably one of the more easier and probable, more likely scenarios. that would, I think, could be that could be pulled off, and we have to be prepared for it. And so in the book, I talk about the dangers of the Iranian deal. I talk about the insecurity of the southwest border and the drug cartels, and that we have to deal with these problems. And, you know, we have to harden our defenses at our major ports.
Well, we're going to take a quick break, and when I come back, we'll discuss other possible threats to the homeland and what America can do to stop them with my guest today, Congressman Michael McCaul. Back in just a moment. If my conversation with Chairman McCaul has piqued your interest, then you should definitely get his book, Failures of Imagination: The Deadliest Threats to the Homeland and How to Thwart Them. And right now, you can download the audio version of his book for free with a special promotion for our listeners from audible.com. Just go to audibletrial.com/kickasspolitics for a free 30-day trial and a free audiobook download, which can be Failures of Imagination by my guest today, Congressman Michael McCaul, or any of Audible's 180,000 titles for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, iPad, or MP3 player. That's audibletrial.com/kickasspolitics. Or click on the sponsor link on our webpage to download the free audio book of your choice. And now, back to the show. We're back, and I'm talking with Congressman Michael McCaul, chairman of the House Homeland Security Committee. Moving on to the third scenario that you envision here, this was an interesting one for me, because in the third chapter, it's called the Manchurian Campaign, and there you describe how a country like China might attempt to influence U.S. elections and essentially buy the presidency. This one, I have to say, initially I thought it was a little far-fetched. This was the one where I had a little bit of skepticism. But then a few pages in, you start to talk about the basis for this theory and some shady campaign donations that were made to the 1996 Bill Clinton campaign. Talk about what happened here, because I almost forgot about that. And you were actually personally involved in that investigation.
Well, I was one of the federal prosecutors on the campaign finance task force at the Department of Justice at the time. The publisher said, let's not make this all about Islamist terror. Can you write a scenario about what was the most interesting case you worked on? Huh. And hands down, this one was quite bizarre. That prosecution of Johnny Chung led us to the director of Chinese intelligence, and we were able to establish that the Chinese government, at its highest levels, through their intelligence director, were funneling money into the United States, into the Clinton campaign. And as you have, I'm glad you've read this chapter, it gets even more bizarre in terms of, threats to his life. We had to put him under federal protection. And then it ended with a guy trying to obstruct him, so he wouldn't cooperate with us. He was having conversations back with high-ranking officials in China. I tried to pursue that case, and it was declined. And then eventually, the FBI agent that I was working with, the lead foreign counterintelligence FBI agent, got indicted for espionage 2 years after that case was over because he was sleeping with the enemy. He was sleeping with a Chinese spy. And you just really, you just can't make this stuff up. And that really happened.
Yeah, and that was amazing. And you talk about how FBI Director Louis Freeh said that there was no more compelling case for the appointment of an independent counsel, but nothing happened with this.
Right. It never went that direction. I thought I did my best. I got one of the few convictions out of the task force. So the case assigned to me, I got my conviction. I wanted to pursue other leads that I thought led us to higher-ranking officials in China. But I was reassigned back to the public integrity section, and that case that I recommended to be prosecuted was sent to the Los Angeles U.S. Attorney's Office, and it was never pursued.
Yeah, and one of these guys in this was actually taking orders and money directly from the head of Chinese military intelligence. So the story that you envision here is not really that far-fetched, especially in the age of super PACs. I have to think that that makes it abundantly easier for a foreign power to disguise some money through a corporation or through a subsidiary corporation in the U.S., which is legal as far as donations now under Citizens United. Has that changed the game a bit if someone were to try and
attempt this? Well, that's right. Well, that's what I was trying to, as we were looking at the story about what happened, in my prosecution to the fictional scenario to modern day money and politics, the idea of super PACs being able to influence a presidential election and foreign money coming in is a very likely scenario. And then I talk also about the Clinton Foundation and how they have all this foreign money that's gone into their foundation as well. And so I think, these super PACs have the potential to be manipulated by foreign agents of a foreign power.
Yeah, and another one that is kind of a hot-button issue that gets a lot of discussion these days is Chapter 5, called Going Dark, Cyber Strike on the World's Financial Capital. Now, this one describes things like quantum computers and forcing a flash crash on U.S. markets. This one's a little above my pay grade, so I'm going to let you explain the hypotheticals behind this one.
Well, this is a very, very sophisticated cyber chapter talking about quantum computing. If you talk to former intelligence NSA types, I talked with Richard Clark, who's an expert on this issue quite extensively. Quantum computing is something that's being developed, and the first country to get it's going to be a major superpower because it's kind of like going from the abacus to the computer. That would be exponentially how more powerful quantum computing is. So a cyber attack envisioned here by what they call attribution, going back to the source, is it's a little mysterious in the fictional chapter because you don't know if it's one of these groups like Anonymous doing it, or is it tied to North Korea and China? And is there some Iranian influence as well? Because the fact is, all those elements have attempted cyber attacks, destructive attacks on the United States. We know North Korea shut down Sony Pictures for their free speech in making a movie. China stole 20 million security clearances from the federal government in an act of espionage, including my own, which I just got notified got stolen. Wow. We know Iran's been hitting our financial sector in a destructive way. So these forces, these elements out there have their growing sophistication in cyber warfare that could do a lot of damage. And in the book, basically have a crash of the stock exchange, which would cause financial chaos, and a crashing of the power grid, in this case in the Northeast, which would shut down virtually everything and drive things back to almost like caveman times. These are real threat scenarios. Fortunately, I had a cybersecurity bill that just got passed in the Congress that will help deal with some of these issues. But this is probably, people ask me what keeps you up at night. This one has probably the most devastating consequences in terms of the damage that could be done.
Yeah. And when you talk about a quantum computer, I guess we are now in a race to be the first one to build a quantum computer. The idea behind it is, I guess, that it can run so many possibilities that it's very easy to hack basically anything, because you can just run every possible password within a matter of moments. We could build one, but how do you defend against something like that?
Well, that's really the point of the chapter. We have to be the first to get that technology. Yeah. We are developing it. There's a race right now going on between the United States and China and Russia to be the first to get it. It's not unlike the pursuit of the atomic bomb with that kind of power. And so the first country that gets this capability, obviously the United States, we're not going to use it in a destructive way unless we absolutely have to in a state of warfare. But We obviously want to be the first to have it so that we can have deterrence and be able to stop any attacks like the ones, the scenario in my book. But if, God forbid, a foreign nation or adversary gets this type of technology, it could be very devastating.
Oh, yeah. You say in here that we really don't have any rules of engagement for something like this. You know, we haven't established would a cyber attack be an act of war? What would our response be? We have no protocol for this situation, and eventually it's probably going to happen.
Well, that's right. I mean, there are no rules of the game in cyberspace, unlike kinetic military space where, you know, you have there are rules of engagement. In fact, we have rules of engagement against ISIS where we have to have zero collateral damage. And, you know, in the cyberspace, there are no rules, and there are no international boundaries or no treaties really on this, although, and there are no rules of the game. What is an act of cyber warfare? What constitutes that? What is a proportional response to an act of warfare? You know, in would say dropping a digital bomb, say, on Sony Pictures, which shut down their entire, all their computers got completely shut down. You have to ask the question, is that an act of warfare? If the physical bomb was dropped by North Korea onto Sony Pictures and blew them up, how's that any different from a digital bomb being dropped and blowing up their entire infrastructure? So this is a sort of new frontier that has no rules of the game right now. And it, to me, it's one of the more fascinating ones.
Yeah, and you cover so much territory and so many different kind of scenarios that really kind of run the gamut. And another one that you talk about is the idea of someone acquiring a smallpox virus and releasing it at Disneyland. Now, for my first questions are, explain how one would go about even acquiring a smallpox virus, and then how would they go about dispersing it or spreading that virus?
You know, this is one that I wrote in response to the Ebola virus, which hit my state in Texas.
Yeah.
You know, and it only impacted a handful of cases, but there was widespread panic. I think because it's a threat you can't see, and you don't know where it's coming from, and you don't know if you're getting on an airplane or wherever, if you could get infected. And so the reason we looked at smallpox is because smallpox has essentially been eradicated. Smallpox killed 100 million people on this planet. It's a deadly, deadly disease, but it's been eradicated. Yet we have a global population that's not inoculated to smallpox. So that is a threat. And so various countries have in some cases, lock and key, in some cases, possibly not, have the smallpox virus. And so in this scenario, we have these sort of these black widows, if you will, that infect themselves at a theme park where you have people from all over the country and all over the world, quite frankly, at Disney World, that visit. And then through these fans that you see at the park all the time, they're able to disperse the virus and cause this viral contamination. This one's kind of, it's a wicked scenario, but only because that virus is so deadly and has historically killed, as I said, 100 million people.
Yeah, and the perfect place to do something like this would be Disneyland. You talk about how the virus wouldn't even be detected until days after people got back home. And, you know, Disneyland, no one's from Disneyland. They're all from all corners of the U.S. And within a few days, they go back to wherever they are. And it could spread like wildfire.
Exactly. And then they go back to where they came from and spread it back back home. And that was a hard one to write, to be honest with you, because it is devastating.
Yeah, and I think one of the big takeaways that I got from this was that, you know, eventually it's almost predictable that one of these scenarios or something similar will happen. And we cannot be 100% right all of the time. if we just stay on the defense. At a certain point, well, we need to bring the fight to the enemy.
You know, if we're not honest about this, and again, I'm not trying to scare people. Certainly not entertain. But these are like red team exercises that the military and the intelligence community routinely do to try to imagine what could happen so we can stop it. You know, after 9/11, President Bush brought in, you know, Hollywood producers to basically be creative about what is it that they could do next.
Yeah.
And what do we need to do to stop it? That's precisely what this book is all about.
But I think one of the most important things is that we need to be offensive about this. We can't just wait for ISIS to try and infiltrate our borders. We need to bring the battle to them. And, you know, so many people, even within your own party these days, there are elements who feel that we should be isolationist and not get involved. Mm-hmm. And you point out we need to put boots on the ground and we need to take these people out. That's the best defense we have.
Well, I do think the best homeland defense is a good offense. And, I think that we have to deal with ISIS, change the rules of engagement. I think we need to, we have to have more special operations forces over there. We do need a Sunni Arab indigenous ground force as well. I don't advocate for 100,000 U.S. combat, but we do have to strengthen the coalition. We have to lead the effort as a superpower. We are a superpower, and that's what my dad's generation, World War II generation, created. We're not leading as a superpower right now, and that's creating a lot of threats across the globe. And one intent of this book is to raise as a point of discussion in the 2016 presidential election, because I think all these threats, national security now, I think, is the number one issue now in the presidential race. And this book is designed to be a point of discussion in the presidential race.
Well, the book is a big wake-up call, and it's called, again, Failures of Imagination, The Deadliest Threats to Our Homeland and How to Thwart Them. And, you know, Chairman McCaul, before we go, I have to say, you do have a gift for storytelling here. And if you ever leave Congress, you know, as someone who reads a lot of scripts and a lot of novels, I'll tell you, I think you could have a second career writing Hollywood blockbusters. I'm just throwing that out there.
I appreciate that. I like to be creative and I like writing. I'm an attorney by trade, so I appreciate the compliment. And I appreciate you, giving this book attention.
Yeah.
I think it's worthy of that.
Well, it was my pleasure. I enjoyed reading the book. It was fascinating. And thanks again, Chairman Michael McCaul, for coming on the show to talk to me about it.
Yeah, I very much enjoyed it. Thanks for having me.
Thanks again to Congressman Michael McCaul for coming on the show to talk about his new book, Failures of Imagination. I'll include an Amazon link in the show notes for this episode and also on the website at kickasspolitics.com. Or if you'd rather listen to the audiobook, you can get it for free through that special trial offer just for our listeners at audibletrial.com/kickasspolitics. You can also follow Congressman Michael McCaul on Twitter at Rep McCaul. That's at REPMCCAUL. Now, don't forget to subscribe to Kick-Ass Politics on iTunes. And while you're there, if you have a moment, please leave us a review. I'd also appreciate it if you went to kickasspolitics.com and filled out a brief audience survey on our homepage. And please, if you enjoy the show and you're so inclined, recommend Kick-Ass Politics to all your friends on social media. And if you really want to help us out, then donate to our GoFundMe campaign at gofundme.com/kickasspolitics. It's really important that we fund our production expenses for this coming year so I can put my energies toward great new guests, interesting topics, and producing more new episodes. Whatever you can give is going to help us get there. So go to gofundme.com/kickasspolitics and make a donation, because everyone needs a little good karma at the start of a new year. Follow me on Twitter at KAPolitics or visit Kickass Politics on Facebook. And as always, I welcome your comments and suggestions at comments@kickasspolitics.com. For now, though, I'm Ben Mathis, and thanks for listening to Kick-Ass Politics. This podcast may not be reproduced without express written permission. Kick-Ass Politics is a trademark of Mathis Entertainment, Inc.